Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Discovery Channel, or whoever does this every year, has embarked on Shark Week. And with us is Steve Kessel, Director of Marine Research at the Shedd Aquarium, to dispel longstanding myths about sharks. Steve, welcome to WGN. How are you?
Hi, happy Shark Week, and thank you for having me.
Sure. Do you sing that baby shark do-do-do-do-do song over there at the Shedd with all the kids coming in? No, you don't.
Not me personally, but I'm sure it has been sung many a time.
When did you first decide that sharks, well, not just sharks, but that this was going to be your area of expertise? Because you were certainly an expert in this regard.
Yes, I mean, in the sense, sharks are my primary expertise. I'm a marine biologist more generally, but I'm a specialist in shark and ray biology and ecology. And it was at a very early age, to be honest with you. I was very obsessed when I was very young with dinosaurs, like a lot of kids are, but also sharks and snakes. And then I realized dinosaurs were no longer on this planet, so that kind of my interest waned there, and I was very focused on sharks and snakes. And then when I was about 5 years old, my mother let me see Jaws for the first time, and from that moment on, it was sharks all the way.
I was going to ask if the movie Jaws had any influence on you at all, and obviously it did. When you were 5 years, how old were you when she took you to see Jaws?
She didn't take me to see it. I'm not quite that old, but it's coming up for its 50th anniversary. I'm not too far off, I guess. But she let me watch it. She didn't let me watch the whole thing initially, because I think that would be bad parenting. But she let me watch some snippets, because I'd been hassling her so much, because I was aware of the film and knew it was about sharks. So she let me watch some of the less gruesome snippets. And as soon as I saw that big white shark, I was obsessed.
Yeah, many of us were. Mostly obsessed with fear, not obsessed with the idea of, hey, you know what? I think that's a field I'm going to work in. You were interested in dinosaurs when you were a kid, and a lot of kids are interested in dinosaurs. And is there a shark myth about their relationship to the dinosaur age, or sharks being it is a dinosaur descendant, or am I totally off base?
So they're not a dinosaur descendant. They're fish. They are a type of fish, and the dinosaurs were reptiles. However, they did indeed precede the sharks, which is not a myth. They emerged on the planet around 450 million years ago, the earliest ancestors, and that's about 200 million years prior to the emergence of dinosaurs. So they did coexist with dinosaurs, and they have succeeded them and survived every major mass extinction since that point to live among us today. Well, among us, in our oceans.
And what would you attribute that longevity to?
I think it's adaptability. It's evolution. They had longer to evolve, so they were able to evolve into lots of different niches within all the different marine ecosystems. So they were largely buffered, by the depth of the ocean, for example, and the diverse number of habitats in the ocean. So if it was indeed the meteor struck, that would have been disruptive. And I'm sure there were some species of shark that went extinct at that time, but they were persistent enough because they were diverse enough to survive all those kind of major extinction events.
How has the shark evolved over all of that time? I mean, that is a massive timeline for an existence of one species.
Yeah, well, it's several species, but, one group of animals. They've evolved quite drastically. If you look at some of the most ancient sharks, they're quite freaky looking, but really some species have remained somewhat consistent. If we look at some of the species around that existed around 300 million years ago, they're very recognizable of sharks. And what's really happened over the years is they've specialized and diversified. So now we have around 450 existing species of shark, and they're very variable, you know, even aesthetically, even how they look, one shark to the next, so what they eat, where they live is very diverse. You know, the smallest shark is the dwarf lantern shark, and it's around 8 inches in length. It's a deep sea species, whereas the biggest shark is now the largest fish in the sea, and that's the whale shark, and that looks very, very different to the dwarf lantern shark, and those things can grow up to maybe 60 feet. So, you know, there's a huge variation and everything in between.
We're talking with Steve Kessel, who's the director of marine research at the Shedd Aquarium, because it's Shark Week, and he's here to bust some myths about sharks, and we'll continue. We're talking with Steve Kessel, director of marine research at the Shedd Aquarium, and an expert on sharks. Well, let's go to the Shedd Aquarium for a minute. Where do we see sharks at the Shedd?
There's around 11 different species of sharks that are on display in the habitats at the Shedd Aquarium, and you know, in reflection of the fact that they're very diverse in where they live in the ocean, it's quite a diverse range of places that you'll find them in the Shedd Aquarium. We have bonnethead sharks, which is the smallest species of hammerhead sharks that live in the Caribbean Reef, the iconic Caribbean Reef exhibit. There you can go and look nature in the eye, and in this case, nature being bonnethead sharks, along with some of their ray relatives in that habitat. We have the leopard sharks that are in the kelp exhibit. They are accompanied by several other sharks, the California horned shark and swell or draftboard sharks, which are very cool benthic sharks. Our most famous kind of shark habitat is the shark exhibit down in Wild Reef, which is one of the newer habitats at the aquarium. There we have several species of sharks. We have the iconic sandbar sharks. They're one of the kind of bigger sharky-looking sharks we have. We also have a shark that's been described as the golden retriever of the sea, the zebra shark, which we are involved in a breeding program with. We have some wobbegong sharks in there that don't look like sharks at all. They're very camouflaged and very benthic and tend to sit on the bottom. And then, in contrast, we have the black-tip reef sharks, which, again, like the sandbar sharks, very sharky, just a little smaller. But again, if you look at the many habitats we have throughout the Shedd Aquarium, you get to encounter sharks and spot your curiosity and compassion for them.
I'd like to back up just a second when you said one of the sharks is sometimes considered the golden retriever of the shark world. How does that relationship, how did you come up with that title for that shark? What is distinctive about that?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't myself who came up with that, and I'm not sure if it was anyone at Shedd, but I have heard some of my colleagues in the animal care department refer to them in that way. And I think it's fitting because they're a very docile species of shark. They don't look, again, they're kind of an atypical looking shark. They've got lots of spots, which might be counterintuitive considered they're called zebra sharks. But they, when they're born, they have black and white stripes, which is where they get their name from. But they tend to spend a lot of time just resting on the bottom, and again, they're very docile. And you know, when they're feeding and things like that at the aquarium, they're very kind of. If you saw them, and if you say did one of our shark feeding tours, where you might get to experience that in person, you'd understand what we mean when we say that. They're a very unintimidating species.
Do sharks coexist with each other?
Well, yes, they do, on the whole. I mentioned there's, I think, about four different species of shark in our wild reef habitat, and in the kelp habitat, we have at least three or maybe four species in there as well. Some sharks play nice together, and others not so much. You know, sharks are often considered a top predator in the marine ecosystems, but that's not always true. They do get eaten quite a lot, and their main predators, the main thing they're prey for is bigger sharks. So it's all about size in the shark kingdom, and bigger sharks rule the day.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much the way it goes, I think. Not only just in the shark kingdom, but maybe in the entire animal kingdom. What would you say the biggest misconceptions about that we have about sharks? What is the biggest misconception? And do you think that that's because of movies like Jaws and Shark Week and, you know, news stories that seem to be not glamorized, but
sensationalized.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's all those things you said, and that being the biggest misconception that sharks are inherently dangerous to humans and that they will, you know, attack on sight. That is very far from the truth. Now, we got to be balanced about this. Obviously, we see on the news that sometimes when sharks and people meet out in the open ocean, it doesn't go that well for the people. People get bit, and occasionally, people die. But it's extremely uncommon that those are the outcomes of people spending time in the water with sharks. Most times that people are in the ocean, they are in pretty close proximity to a shark, sometimes extremely close proximity. And sharks are exceptional predators. That's one of the things that's allowed them to survive for so long on our planet. And they're very, very agile and quick in the water, and we are not. Even an Olympic swimmer is not even close to a match for, you know, even some of the slower shark species, and there's some really fast ones out there. So if we were, you know, something that they saw as a viable prey item, something that they wanted to eat regularly, we would not be able to go in the water. The fact that there's millions of people in the oceans every single day, and on average, you know, 8 people are killed globally by sharks. That's really a numbers game that you have to admit that they really can't be that dangerous to people.
You mentioned sharks in the Caribbean and that part of the world. Have they shown up unexpectedly in other areas offshore, different parts of North America or other areas for that matter?
I wouldn't necessarily say unexpectedly. It's more our ability to, you know, observe them in areas that we maybe haven't before. Now, with, you know, climate change comes warming oceans, and that maybe has and may continue to expand the ranges of some species. You know, the warmer the water gets, the further north, the more potential there is for some of those tropical and subtropical species to travel further up the coast. But really, I think, you know, especially given how long sharks have been on the planet and they are really present in every ocean ecosystem, I think they've been there a lot. It's just now with new technologies, everyone has a GoPro, a lot of people have drones. We're starting to see them a lot more. You know, you can be very close to a shark and not ever realize. I remember I was in Miami Beach with a friend and we were standing, you know, about knee deep in the water. And my friend said to me, "Do you think there's a shark anywhere in the water that we can see in front of us?" I said, "Oh, 100%. I said, "In fact, look, there's one right now." And a black-tipped shark, you know, that was about maybe 4 or 5 feet in length, swam within about 2 meters of us. But if you don't know what you're looking for, you're not really even going to see it. They're quite light. Right. It was over sand. And it swam, you know, I watched it, and it swam past probably a couple of hundred people without anyone even realizing it was there. Now we kind of have that aerial view from the drones and the cameras that are waterproof, the phones that are waterproof. We're starting to document it a bit more. I think that's more the case than the fact that they're moving into newer areas.
So that stereotypical shot of the shark fin breaking the water as the music builds, that's a stereotype that doesn't apply. Is that correct?
You know, they do, we call that finning, and they do that. And the closer they come to shore, that, you know, the fin becomes exposed because of the depth of the water. Some species will do that in the open ocean, but that's handy for us as researchers. You know, one of the things I specialize in is spatial ecology, and that's tracking the movements and migration of sharks. And we manipulate that behavior by putting satellite tags attached to the fins so that when they do break the surface with the fin, we can get GPS locations and kind of follow them around as they break the surface. So it's not something, you know, like an act of aggression or posturing. It's just something that happens when they get very close to the surface, whether that be near the coast or in the open ocean. And it's very handy for us researchers.
What is the process of attaching a GPS to the fin of a shark? How is that done?
There's several different ways we can do it, but it depends on the type of tag. But, you know, one of the more dramatic or astonishing ways we do it is that we literally drill holes in the fin and bolt the satellite tag on there. And that might sound a bit you know, inhumane, but sharks don't have any vascular system in their fin. It's purely, you know, cartilage and basal cartilage. They don't seem to react when we do it, and there's no, not even any bleeding that's associated with that. So it's very handy for us that we're able to do that. And you know, sharks are very, very tough, robust animals. So that's really nothing to them. It's like, you know, say us getting an ear piercing, but even less traumatic, I'd say.
One last question here, and this is just one of those stereotypical questions that some, or stereotypes rather, about sharks that I picked up somewhere, and it's lodged somewhere in my brain, and I don't know why, but the question is, do they sleep? Do sharks sleep?
You know, it's not an area of research that I have am too familiar with, but, you know, it depends what you mean by sleep, and that's, you know, a common question with many fish, because some species of sharks need to swim in order to breathe. They're called ram ventilators, and they need to have forward motion to move water over their gills. So in that sense, they're never truly sleeping in the same sense we are, but we believe they kind of are able to kind of minimize their brain activity and just go into a cruising mode where they can kind of rejuvenate in that sense. Whereas other species who can pump water over their gills, one of the examples of that being the zebra shark that we discussed before, the golden retrievers of the ocean or of the shark kingdom, they appear to sleep in the sense that they will lay down sometimes under a ledge, sometimes just on the sand, and be motionless for, you know, quite long periods of time. So whether or not they're truly sleeping, I don't know, but they definitely, some species can rest more than others, and others need to kind of keep swimming. So I think they're minimizing the brain activity rather than really shutting down completely.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Steve Kessel, Director of Marine Research at Shedd Aquarium, shedding a lot of light on sharks as the discovery picks up and starts at Shark Week.